Thank you, Prem, and thank you, Sai Prakash. And dear listeners, Sai Ram from Prashantanilam, the most happening place on the planet, as I always say. And welcome to this last leg of Thursday live broadcast from the studios of Radio Sai. I'm Team Radio Sai's Vishu, and the time in the studios now is 8:38, and the month of June is almost midway. And June always means a new freshness in Prashantanilam. Because the new academic year begins in June, you see a new army of white and white, and students form such an integral part of everything that happens in Prashantanilam. There is no festival in Puttaparthi that students are not part of. There is no celebration in Sai Kulwant Hall that the students don't participate. In fact, the daily routine of Prashantanilam Ashram, what happens in Mandir every morning and evening, the prayers, the Vedic chants, the bhajans, all are carried out by the students, current students or former students. Therefore, seeing a new crop of this blessed Lord as in new session of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning begins is always, always so refreshing. And even now, even if the physical presence of Bhagwan is no longer present, there are hundreds and thousands vying and praying to get into these institutions, be it the primary school, be it the Sri Satya Sai Higher Secondary School or the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, which has now four campuses in Puttaparthi, Bangalore, Anandpur and also Mudanahalli. In fact, all the students from all these four campuses had assembled here in Prashantanilam just a couple of days ago on June 8th, 9th and 10th to be precise, to participate in the academic year 2013-2014's first program, the summer course in Indian culture and spirituality, which was held in the Purnachandra Auditorium. It was primarily an orientation program for the freshers into the philosophy and culture of India, and also a refresher course for all the others. The session on the morning of June 8 began with the registrar of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning welcoming the students and outlining the purpose of this summer course. This was a short 8-minute presentation wherein the speaker delineated the central purpose of the Satya Sai educational institutions. I've got that clip for you, so please do listen to this as it is actually very profound. What he states is what Bhagwan has said about the central objective of this institution. And after you listen to this, we will deliberate on this. And then joining me in this discussion is an illustrious alumnus of Bhagwan's institutions, educational institutions. I'll come to that in a few minutes. Let that be a surprise. So let's begin now with Dr. Naren Ramji, the registrar, and his message to all the students and staff of Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning on the opening session of the summer course in Indian culture and spirituality. Here it is.
On behalf of Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, I welcome you all to this year's summer course on Indian culture and spirituality. A special welcome to the students who have joined Bhagwan's educational institution this year, students of the 11th standard, students of the undergraduate program in the university, and students who have joined the postgraduate program of the university, and also to dear students who have come back for a new academic year after a summer vacation. The underlying philosophy of the educational institutions founded and nurtured by Bhagwan is very unique. And for the sake of students and for all of us, it may be nice if we can just revisit the underlying philosophy in Bhagwan's own words. I quote, "The Sai educational institutions have been established not merely to enable students to earn a living, but to make them acquire good traits, lead ideal lives, and give them ethical, moral, and spiritual strength. I have established them with a view to inculcate love and teach good qualities to students. They will learn here humility, discipline, and faith. I have established these institutions to impart spiritual education as a main component and worldly education as a secondary one. Education should enable one to cultivate good qualities, character, and devotion. The teaching of the university curricula is only the means employed for the end, namely spiritual uplift, self-discovery, and social service through love and detachment. This will be a gurukula, a place where teachers and taught will grow together in love and wisdom. And like the ancient system of education, it will develop in students a broad outlook and promote virtues and morals which serve to foster noble ideals in society. This institute will be a temple of learning where youth are shaped into self-reliant, contented, and enterprising heroes of action and self-sacrifice for the purpose of serving humanity." Unquote. Students, please have no doubt that you have been specially chosen by Bhagwan to study in his institutions. Because Bhagwan has found that potential in you which he feels will blossom into his vision of this institute. Have no doubt about it. While we have the admission tests and all these so-called worldly mechanisms of selection, eventually it is Bhagavan's will that has brought you here. And that is true for all of us, including the teachers. The summer course, therefore, is a very apt beginning of the academic year, which lays the spiritual foundations for the endeavors which we follow throughout the academic year. The summer course marks the beginning and renewal of the sacred relationship between the student and Swami. Values are taught not only in our institution, but in so many institutions around the world. What makes the difference between them and us? It is my firm belief that values by themselves are fine, but they become merely academic and are not practiced because they lack a spiritual foundation. In this divine institution, Swami laid the spiritual foundation on which and via which he imparts values to us. And that is what gives us the confidence to practice them and the courage to face the world outside. Dear students, this is a very glorious opportunity and a very important facet of your lives. This kind of university life will never come back to you again. Some of you may spend 3 years with us, maybe 2 years, or maybe 5 to 6 years. Please don't take this opportunity for granted. It's a very special opportunity given by Bhagavan to you to bring you close to Him. And with the fact that the summer course gives you that spiritual basis, never forget that the most important thing this university can give is that you can experience the relationship with God. You may argue that this can be done any time, but please believe me, I have also been a beneficiary of this wonderful system, and I can tell you there is no more conducive atmosphere anywhere else in the world where you can develop this sacred relationship with God. And when you begin to explore, when you begin to try to contact Him, He will give you the experience and the assurance that is with you all the time. Dear students, let it be your endeavor that in your span of stay in this institution with Swami, your goal should be that you, before you leave the portals of the institution, you have a very clear connection with Swami, a hotline with Him, and the full confidence that is always standing next to you, whatever you face in this world. That is why I said, values without a spiritual foundation are very dry, but values with a spiritual foundation are easy to practice because you have that confidence and the courage that there is Swami next to you to do the right thing and to face an adverse situation with equanimity. I pray to Bhagavan that He gives us all the spiritual insight to begin this academic year in His thought. And I pray to Him that He guides us all towards the goal He has set for all of us. I welcome you all once again to the summer course, and I hope that the program for the next 2.5 days does fulfill the objective of the course as stated by us. Sai Ram.
So that was Dr. Naren Ramji, the registrar of Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning, clearly expressing what this university stands for, what is unique about it. And when he quoted Bhagwan's words, he mentioned how Bhagwan had very clearly stated what he wants this university to achieve. In fact, when it started, it was the 109th university at that time in 1981, and Swami mentioned very clearly, there are already 108 universities, why have I started this? And as he mentioned, the teaching of the university curriculum, as Bhagwan says, is only the means employed for the end. The end is not what the students learn in the classes, it is not the subjects. The end is something else, as Swami very clearly states, namely spiritual uplift, self-discovery, and social service through love and detachment. And then he goes on to add that there will be a Gurukula kind of a system here where the teacher and the taught will grow together in love and wisdom. And like the ancient system of education, it will help develop in students a broad outlook and promote virtues and morals. Why? So that they can serve society, so that it will help to foster noble ideals in society. In fact, when you reflect on this, how powerful is this message of Swami and how relevant it is. The purpose of learning, as Swami says in this, is to develop character. It is to help society. It is for self-discovery. And one really wonders how many educational institutions in the world today have this as their goal seriously. When you come to think of it, all the restlessness and fear, most of the violence and malpractices in the world today, if you investigate, they are not done by people who are uneducated or who do not get the chance to graduate from top universities. In fact, it is the opposite. Be it planning and executing terrorist attacks like 9/11, or the bursting of the housing bubble in the USA, or the large banking corporations folding up overnight, or the recent controversy about cyber espionage. Any instance you take, most of these instances that we come across every day in our life and in our newspapers every morning, it is the most highly educated and the most intelligent among our lot who have actually let humanity down. possibly because their educational training was lopsided, possibly because success was always measured in terms of material wealth and acquisition of power. And that is what everyone aspired as a student and later as a young professional. Success was never defined in terms of being of use to others. Success was never spoken of as being content with what we have and learning to find happiness with what we have got. Success was never stated as confirming to one's principles, come what may. And maybe that is probably one of the reasons for the sorry state of affairs that we see in India and also elsewhere. And that is also the reason why Bhagwan, when he started this university in 1981, actually the colleges began much earlier. The Anandpur College started in 1968, the Bangalore campus in 1969. Since then, the primordial mission of Satya Sai Educational Institutions has been the cultivation of virtues more than anything else. And this is not to the exclusion of regular professional subjects. As Dr. Naren Ramji mentioned, the other education is definitely there, but that is secondary. And this university started its 33rd academic session in this month, and in the last two episodes of this program, dear listeners, if you remember, we had panel discussions with three former students of Baba's university who chose to stay back and serve in his institutions in Puttaparthi after their masters in management and sciences in 2012. For 1 year they have been serving here, and we spoke to them and we heard their reflections. And today we have someone who has distinguished himself in the professional academic world outside, but feels deep connection with the institutions here in Puttaparthi, Dr. R. Pavanandan. Pavanandan did his schooling from class 3 to class 12, that is grade 3 to grade 12 in Prashanthi Nilayam, and after this he joined the Vrindavan campus of Bhagwan's university, and after a brief stint in the university in that campus there, he moved on with Bhagwan's permission to pursue his graduation in mechanical engineering from Chaitanya Bharati Institute of Technology, Hyderabad, which he completed in 2001. And then he went on to do his master's, his M.Tech, in Energy Systems Engineering in Indian Institute of Technology, Mumbai, IIT Mumbai. In fact, he stood first in the entrance test when he cracked this exam to get into this prestigious institution, IIT Mumbai. And from there on, he has had an illustrious academic career. He was selected by Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, USA, to do his PhD in Engineering and Public Policy. He received his doctorate in 2007 from this university, and then he did a year of postdoctoral work in Greece, and after that, thanks to his brilliant academic record, he found himself in NASA. In NASA's GISS Institute, the Goddard Institute for Space Studies in New York City, where he worked for 4 years, initially as a postdoctoral scientist and then as an associate scientist. This institute is located in the Columbia University, and so he is also parallelly currently a visiting scientist with Columbia University. And also let me add that he's had 8 peer-reviewed publications in highly ranked international journals. So, to put it in short, he's had a really very distinguished academic career, and we are so happy that he's here in Prashanthi Nilayam today with us in the studios of Radio Sai while he's contemplating on his future area of work and he's taking a break in Prashanthi Nilayam. By Bhagwan's grace and Bhagwan's will, we are happy that he's here with us today. Thank you so much, Pavan, and a welcome to you to the studios of Radio Sai.
Thank you, Bishu. And at the very outset, actually, let me express my deep sense of gratitude to Bhagwan. And you have given me an extremely generous introduction. And I want to clearly state that Swami is the doer, and without him, I would have been an absolute zero in life. So anything I've achieved in my life is to his credit, and I have really done nothing, you know. So, thank you.
Well, that is something, thanks to, again, Bhagwan's grace, that, you know, we have that understanding that
absolutely.
We are just zeros, and only when he as the one stands in front of that, then there is some meaning to all the zeros that we have acquired.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry to say that all that we have acquired is zeros.
Exactly.
But as you mentioned, you know, only when you have Bhagwan, then everything acquires so much meaning.
Absolutely.
Because ultimately at some point you do realize that even for little things in life, you realize that we couldn't have done that without something working behind the scenes. So wonderful, you know, it's nice to see you here in Prashantinilayam after so many years. So may I ask you, you've traveled so much outside, you've been in very prestigious universities and you moved on from this place almost 10-12 years ago. Now when you come back and when you look at the institutions here, when you think about the days that you spent in Prashantinilayam, when you walk into the Sai Kulwant Hall, when you take a stroll in the streets of Prashantinilayam, what thoughts come to you? How do you reflect on this place?
Okay, Pawan. Quite honestly, you know, the first thought that comes is, why did I leave? You know, but yeah, honestly, Swami, you know, directs this puppet show called life. So each one, unbeknownst to us, has a certain route to take in life, and we are, you know, quite helpless at times, and you're being taken from one place to another. You know, absolutely, it's just, you know, as moment by moment, I realize just what incredible opportunity we had, you know.
Yes.
I mean, particularly because when I was in the primary school, if you don't mind, I'll just go back.
Sure, please do.
Many years back, and I first came in 1985. Mm-hmm. My father got selected as an associate professor, or a reader as we call here, in the Satsai Institute of Higher Learning, as it was known then.
Yes.
And it was the Department of Commerce. And the question my father had before he joined was, what will my children do here? And Swami, very generously, I was in supposed to join the third grade wherever I was, and as you know, the primary school only accepts in the first grade and then again in higher secondary at 11th.
Yes.
So a very special clause was made and I was allowed to get in.
Wow.
And so that's how I prior to that I had
no clue about
Swami. I was 7 years old, and so that's how I joined the institution. So in those years, I don't know how many listeners know this, but I think primary school was in its early years of inception.
Yes.
And like with many other things that Swami nurtured with so much love in the initial years, he just poured his love into the institutions, you know, like a mother would do.
Yes.
To a child. And the opportunities we had were just incredible. Now I forget, you know, Swami would randomly come into the classrooms and sit in the back, I think, and see how the teachers were teaching. You know, Swami would come into the grounds and we would all gather around him, and he would, you know, just talk, and the warden auntie and headmistress auntie and kitchen auntie, as we used to call them.
Yes.
They used to all be there. And the opportunities were endless, and, you know, looking at the students in the latter years,
we just took it for granted.
Exactly.
Right?
So, you know, it's hard to understand why we get such opportunities. You know, there are now 7 billion people on the planet, and, you know, why, you know, what we did, you know, to get such opportunities, and it's hard to explain to anybody else, you know, when I look at some of the photos and look at, you know, when the summer course was revived, for example, in 1990, we got the opportunity to, as staff children and school children too, to visit, have many wonderful lunches with Swami and dinners, you know, when the summer course...
So even as a little one, you attended summer course.
Exactly. So
even though you're not in the university.
Exactly. So I have all those fond memories of, you know, it's, again, It's so hard to explain why, you know, to an outside person, why one would be so excited about doing things about Indian culture and spirituality. You know, people would be excited to go to a cricket match or a soccer match or a, yes, or a basketball, you know, game. But that we were so excited natively without being told who Swami was, we just intuitively probably knew that this was God, you know.
Yes.
I don't think ever we were told He's God or something. We just, you know, knew and we just relished every opportunity to be God. So those are the kinds of memories when I look at the primary school, when I look at the higher secondary school, etc. So
were there any moments, Pawan, in your days in the primary school and later in the higher secondary school, which were your, shall I say, your wow moments, you know, your moments that always you fall back upon when you think about these days, the moments that have always been your eternal source of inspiration, moments that, you know, reveal to you what Bhagwan is?
Absolutely. Thanks for asking that. I think I can really revive some of those memories and feel happy. One of the things that happened is because I, you know, came abruptly in the third grade, I was sort of partially at that time already used to being a day scholar.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I remember being very, very, you know, sad that I had to stay in the hostel initially. And I'm going to say this particular incident because it many years later, it happened, but that Swami never really forgets, you know. He is our innermost reality, it seems, and He knows all the things we go through, and no emotion is something light for Him or something that's to be put away. He notes everything. So the fact that every year I used to go back more than anybody else after summer holidays, I would really, you know, cry that I had to go back to hostel. Not because there was anything bad in hostel. Actually, they were probably more loving even than parents, as you've experienced. Was just, you know, I think I had a hard time separating from parents and going,
yes,
back.
Because you were, till third grade, you were with at home with the parents, eating with them, sleeping,
yes,
with them.
Yes.
So it's difficult.
And also probably by predisposition, I was like that, you know. Some people are more, you know, easy going in that regard. But many years later, actually, when I went into the secondary section, the higher secondary section, in ninth grade, I got a really light grade fever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the principal was then the Mr. Habu.
Yes,
if you remember.
Yes.
And incidentally, I must state to the listener that Bishu and I were classmates.
Yes.
So we have a little more connection here.
Yes.
So we have some things in common there. So Mr. Habu called me aside and said, you know, you seem to have a light grade fever. Why don't you go home? I just want the listener to know that it's day scholar was not allowed. That is,
yes,
you could, even if you had an extreme medical condition, Bhagwan wanted you to really stick it out in the hostel and work it out. And so that was the nature of the discipline. Not that he was a ruthless disciplinarian or something. He wanted everybody on the same platform, you know. But for some reason, that year, I got a small opportunity to go to the school, to go to the school from home.
Okay.
And why I'm stating this is, as many of you know here, nothing happens without Swami's explicit permission.
Yes.
And I know, and if it was just 1 or 2 weeks, I would understand, but for 1.5 years, Swami allowed me.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, but that very year, Ash, another classmate of ours, Ashish, and I, and another with a very, whose parents were in a bad.
This happened, you were in which standard?
Ninth grade.
I joined you in 11th.
Yes. So before that, this,
yes,
was. And this was really unheard of, actually. I know people with far more serious medical.
1.5 years you were staying at home, so Swami gave you that chance.
Yes, yes. And I know that every time Mr. Habu would would check in with me, and he would say, you know, just stay on. So I'm sure Swami
definitely
was giving up.
Yes. I mean, allowing someone to stay in the home is unthinkable.
Exactly.
In our system, unless Swami's permission was definitely received
for 1.5 years. And also there are a couple of things I want to say. One, that Swami, you know, even the smallest emotion you have is something he notices, and he really takes care of you like a mother, you know.
Yes.
So I'm sure many other students have felt like that, but I don't know why he gave me that opportunity, the love, you know, the concern. And during that time, actually, there were many interesting things, because when you're a day scholar, you're out of sync with the hostel schedule.
Yes.
So one occasion what happened was that we had the small procedure that Swami would himself give out what's called the hall ticket for the 10th board examinations.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know, this is a national, students from the school sit simultaneously for this board examination.
Central Board of Secondary Education.
Exactly.
CBSE exam.
And his Swami's love for us was so immense that he would personally, in those years at least, hand out the hall tickets to the students one by one. And so that particular morning, apparently it was already announced ahead of time that this was going to be done the next morning, but somehow, you know, I didn't get the message. And that next morning I was still at home eating breakfast, and suddenly Mr. Shivram Krishnaya, who later became the principal, came running to our flat in the staff quarters, and he said, "What are you doing here? Swami is waiting for you."
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know what he was waiting for. So with Mr. Shivram Krishnaya, I ran all the way to the mandir, and there, you know, the most amazing sight greeted me. Swami was holding, apparently, I was told later, my hall ticket for 10 minutes or more, even longer perhaps, and just happily dancing with it. God knows, bestowing what blessings, only He knows.
Mm.
And I reflect, and you know, then when I came, he didn't chide me or anything, like the most loving mother. He just gave me my hall ticket after giving me Pad Namaskar. You know, many years later, I reflected on it, and I think, you know, here's the sovereign of this cosmos and many others. You know, only He knows what's the extent and on all this and beyond. And, you know, why does He need to make time for one insignificant fellow, you know?
Yes.
And it's just mind-boggling to me, the nature of His love, the immensity, the boundlessness, and just, you know, His concern for every student of His institutions, whether we know it or not.
Yes.
It showed me He cared for every one of us.
If Swami were to all the time say, okay, I did this for you, I did that for you, I did that for you, you know, it would be endless.
Exactly.
There are perhaps only very, very, very exceptional instances when He really reveals how He has taken care of us. But I think it is an experience of not only every student, but every devotee, that, you know, for every occasion that we know visibly, palpably, how He has graced us, or how He has protected us, or how He has showered His benediction on us. I think there are countless number of occasions when He has done that and we do not know.
Exactly. And I have had many instances where He has protected me, where I have known there is a sign left behind. And one of them maybe I'll share. This was in the years I was in Hyderabad, actually, for my, sometime in the late 90s. And, many of you live in India know that the buses and all in India are absolutely jam-packed. And, I was in one of those buses in a really busy part of Hyderabad, really in the center of the city. And, you know, I never really ever adjusted to city life, to be honest. So, but I had to somehow deal with it. And, part of dealing with city life is you have to deal with these buses and all, and you have to get off running buses sometimes.
Yes.
Something that only Indians are probably, or people from the subcontinent are aware of. on that occasion, I did the most absolutely silly thing. I decided to be very adventurous, and without any prior practice, I just decided to board from a running bus. It was going at pretty brisk speed, actually, probably 30 kilometers per hour or something in the city center. And I fell down, and immediately, because I had books in one hand, and I fell on my right hand. So I had to brace myself with only one hand. And so as soon as I fell, I knew that I had broken my right wrist in multiple locations, because the pain was excruciating as soon as I fell. And it was lucky that some vehicle didn't pass over me. So somehow I got my wits together, you know, and I went and sat on the footpath. And, you know, I was dazed. I couldn't even think. And then out of nowhere, an auto driver walks very calmly towards me. And very, very politely, you know, asked me, "Sir, what's happened to you?" And I was too dazed to answer. I just showed him my hand. And he seems to have understood what happened. And he said, "Wherever you need to go, I'll take you." And that time I lived in a very, very remote part of Hyderabad with my grandmother, in a very remote part, about 25 kilometers away from Hyderabad, actually. So to get to that itself, I needed to get to a very obscure bus station that would then take me to that stop. So that itself was something that I couldn't have done in that condition. So I was surprised that somebody noticed my condition and so gently asked me what I needed to do. And so I somehow composed myself and said I needed to get to this particular obscure spot in Hyderabad where this bus would then take me to my grandmother's place. And he said, "I'll surely take you there." And he seems to have known exactly where that was. It's a very obscure spot, by the way. You know, not every bus, you know, auto driver would know that. And so, when he finally got me to that spot, I said, "What? How much should I pay you?" He said, "Sir, no money. Please, no money."
Oh, that's strange.
Exactly. You know, why would an auto driver in Hyderabad
stop,
ask me how my condition was, and, you know, not charge a fee. He refused to take any fee. And then he put me on the bus, and then I got, you know, I was on route to there. And I was too, you know, ruffled up to know what happened, actually. You know, I didn't think about it. But the next day, my father sat for darshan in front and asked and told Swami what happened. And Swami said, "Careless fellow, tell him. If not for my grace, far worse would have happened," he said. And, you know, I think, you know, Swami says he can assume whatever name, whatever form he wants. And in fact, that all names and forms are his. But that as special acts of grace, he assumes any form at any time he wants to help us. And I can't but think that, you know, that was Swami that day, come as an auto driver, with refusing to even charge me a fee. You know, it's something unheard of in a hustle and flow of city life. And, you know, there are many instances like this where, looking back, I know Swami's protection was there throughout, you know, and has continued to be there. Is, you know, he's there, he's here. So that's one other instance of his continuing grace. And one more incident I'll say, and we can wrap up this reflection. This relates again to what Swami says, that he's beside us, above us, below us, and that we might forget him, but that he never forgets us, that he's always with us. Throughout the years I was here, I used to always write letter, and I used to ask Swami, "Please perform my Upanayanam," which
wearing ceremony.
Exactly, the sacred thread ceremony in which you're initiated into the Gayatri, amongst other things, by the Guru. So, you know, I left with Swami's permission. I forgot totally about this deep desire that I used to have that Swami perform my Upanayanam. Years later, when I totally forgot about all this, and you might have been part of the ceremony too, because in 2000 Swami again announced.
Yes, 2000.
And this was only for students, current students of the institution.
Yes.
And
even I had my Upanayanam at that.
Exactly.
Time.
I see the photo and I think I've seen.
Yes.
So just out of giving a long shot, my father said, I'm going to ask Dr. Sivsankar Sai, who was in charge of making up the list, final list. And there were about 100 candidates that were shortlisted for this privilege, rare privilege. So my father said, let's just ask him. So he said, okay, I mean, I'm not having the power to decide. Let me ask Swami. And Swami apparently said, yes, yes, let him be here. Even though I was not a student. And you would think it ends there. Now, on that day of the Upanayanam, all I can remember is Swami directly walking from Yajur Mandir. And this is again to underscore the point that after all these years, Swami did not forget that one fervent request or deep desire that I had. Swami came straight from the Yajur Mandir. You know, he could have avoided me altogether. You know, it could have been, I would still know that it's a special act of grace. But this sealed it for me because he came straight from the Yajur Mandir to me. And after all these years, he looked intently at me and then he asked me a very personal question to which I really don't know the answer to this day. As you know, his questions are so multidimensional and there's no way you can answer it. But after that, I gave some rambling answer because you lose sense of time and space, as you know, with Swami's questions. You forget what the question is even. So I answered something, but he looked with so much love.
What did he ask?
He actually asked some really, I don't know to this day why he asked that. He said, you know, again in most loving way, he said, Bangaru, golden one, with so much love. Vayasanta. In Telugu, which means, what's your age? You know, clearly it was not, I don't know what, you know.
As you mentioned, you never know. Sometimes, Swami just want to converse something.
Something, you know, that is near sambhashan.
I mean, that is at the most, I mean, at various levels of understanding. And when we also cannot understand, probably that's what we'll say, but we never know what
exactly.
He was trying to communicate.
Yes. And he said, that's what he asked with so much love.
And you really didn't answer anything.
I don't even remember whether I answered, but he just looked at me with so much compassion.
But at least, you mean, it was actually a sort of recognition in the sense that you are the only one who's not a student.
Exactly.
And, you know, he came straight to you and, you know, you had his direct blessings. He's sort of acknowledging your presence.
Exactly. And it didn't end with that because then with so much compassion, and those were the days I think he stopped sort of routine Pad Namaskars. So,
yes.
Right? And he said, Tisko.
Wow.
As he used to say. Exactly.
Pad
the
namaskar.
Blessing was so, I mean, something which you cannot, I mean, ever deserve, you know. I mean, that, like you said, he singled me out, saying that special act of grace and consummating it with, again, this act of special Pad Namaskar. And, you know, I think, I don't know why, he conferred a great blessing. But, you know, over and above everything, he just told me, you know, you might leave me physically, but I never leave you. You know, I'm always with you, whether you're doing good or bad or whatever. I always love you and I'm hoping that one day you will take to the path that I have envisioned for you, you know.
Yes.
So that's how compassionate he is, you know.
Wonderful.
So that's sort of some of the things, you know, and we can all, you know, go on and on, but
wonderful.
You know.
I mean, yeah, but I think every student and every devotee in their life, they have so many magical moments in their life, and I think even one of these moments are enough for you to connect with him. and feel His presence and feel His grace. And Swami ensures that all of us have these moments.
Absolutely.
Now moving on, Pavan, as you mentioned, you after your 12th grade here at Prashanthi Nilayam, you stayed for a brief while in Vrindavan campus, and then you moved on to Hyderabad to pursue your mechanical engineering, and then to IIT Mumbai. So you had the opportunity to see many other colleges and stay in many other hostels. May I ask you, given that you had an experience of staying in the Satya Sai hostel, and at that time the school boys too used to stay in the same hostel,
yeah,
where the institute boys now stay. At that time you didn't have two different hostels, so you practically had you have seen that hostel environment in its entirety. And you went to the school, you went to the college, and now you went outside and you saw the systems of education outside. So when you look at both these institutions, what comes to your mind?
Well, they couldn't be any more different. I mean, there's a world of difference. It's definitely an incredible culture shock, you know. I mean, in many ways, you know, people might say I've changed a lot or whatever. That's their perception. In many ways, I've probably changed. But, you know, it never ceases to amaze me how much Swami invested in us, and that culture shock is always there. Whenever I head back from Puttaparthi, you know, I always feel a sense of, you know, not belonging elsewhere. But, you know, slowly but surely Swami made me get used more and more. But, you know, for example, maybe I can go through a little bit of, you know, how our life used to be here.
Yes.
You know, it's absolutely clear from day one of being here that Swami has a system that He has set out for us, where unbeknownst to us, we're being molded. You know, there's no explicit agenda.
Yes.
It's just all happening behind the scenes.
As you just live in the system, things keep happening to you.
Exactly. So, for example, you know, as you were just playing the clip from the registrar, you know, this system of integral education has maybe been discussed before by, you know, others, but nowhere else has it been, first of all, conceptualized in nearly the same depth and detail and implemented successfully, because, as you know, the institutions have been running for the last 30, 40 years, so they're not, you know, small experiments or something. They're large-scale experiments that have succeeded and have produced hundreds and thousands of illustrious alumni, you know, students who've gone on to achieve great things in life. So this system that in sort of endeavors to achieve this harmonious and simultaneous development of body, mind and spirit, so that we become sharing and caring people in the world, is something that is unparalleled, you know, in the way it's been executed. So for example, you would get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and you know, there would be a simple spiritual routine, nothing extraordinary, and you know, maybe it's surprising for people from outside that we get up at 5 o'clock, but most of us enjoyed doing it. You would get up at 5 o'clock, you would do Suprabhatam, Omkaram, and Ashtotram of Swami. Very simple, 15-30 minutes. So there, right away, the tone for the day is being set. You're slowly awakening and getting into this relaxed spiritual mood. And right after that, we would go for a, you know, physical exercise, a light jog in the round and stretching and Surya Namaskars. So first we're taking care of the spirit. Note the order.
Yes.
The spirit, then the body.
Yes.
The physical exercise, and right after that, we would probably have a light breakfast and go, and then the morning session of classes would start. And again, this school couldn't have been any different. You know, I mean, it's just incredible how you would go in. It's absolutely, you know, you would take your shoes and or whatever, you know, sandals you were wearing and leave them outside the classroom. And that's indicative of the fact that this is a temple, not just, yes. You know.
The amount of respect.
Exactly.
That you want to give to what you receive in classroom.
Exactly.
The learning, I mean, in Indian culture, learning is equated with Goddess Saraswati.
Exactly.
And that is how you look at what you receive in these institutions.
Exactly. And you would start with a prayer again. Most
yes.
classes, the teacher would start with a prayer. And in the afternoon, after the classes were done in the morning session, you would go at noon and have lunch. And this again, note that, you know, the food was being served by the students again.
Yes.
And behind the scenes, probably students were even helping in the cooking.
Yes.
Students would serve at the counter, and also when the students were seated down. Note how the aspect, and we can come to this later, the aspect of teamwork was so inbuilt into the whole thing.
Yes.
And then again, you would chant and in Brahmarpanam, or the prayer that's basically saying that this food is nothing but a form of God and asking for purification. And this I've learned subsequently is because for many years later, you might be really, really aghast to know that I never really did Brahmarpanam later years when I went outside for many years. And I really will say, you know, the potency and the reason for this prayer has become so evident to me, you know, mm-hmm. that... you know, Swami has explained again and again how the food is so critical, especially in the early stages of spiritual development. It's almost the most important aspect. The food you eat is basically making up your the outermost sheath of the body, the flesh and the bones and the blood. And in the subtle form, it almost is the biggest influence on our thoughts. And the fact that very, very pure individuals selected by Swami, handpicked by Swami, were doing the cooking in the kitchens and being served likewise by sincere students. And then we performed the Brahmarpanam to nevertheless remove any other impurities that will still exist in the food. It made a huge difference in our life. Again, without knowing all this, Swami incorporated so much in our life. And then you would finish your meal and you would wash your plates by yourself. So everything was sort of the self-reliance aspect. And then after the school was eventually over for the day, we would go to the mandir for darshan. And I mean, now that we look back, the blessings, you know, whether we were sitting down and not really focused or not even on the incredible gift of darshan, I'm sure Swami each day came in and day out and blessed us. His aura probably just basically enveloped us, I'm sure. And it transformed us whether we knew it or not. So again, not only was his silent transformation occurring, we saw it daily how Swami was interacting with students, with devotees from India, from overseas, how he was conducting himself. We could get directly an opportunity at seeing the avatar himself conduct himself. As he said, his life is his message. And then we would come home and have a few hours of study and go to sleep at 10 o'clock. And despite all this, note that the students of the school were some of the best performing students in the national board examination.
Yeah, and it continues even.
It continues to this
day. Year, yeah.
So the message was that don't try to work till 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, stay. Work within the constraints of the system that I have set for you with your best interest in mind. You had to sleep at 10. Within all this, people will wonder how you, you know,
Yeah, because in outside colleges and outside schools, I mean, people spend their entire, I mean, I know of so many children outside, you know, once they are in that 9th class, 10th class, you know, their entire day, 7 o'clock, it starts with tuitions and tuitions and tuitions. Tuitions, school, again, come home, have your tiffin or something, go back to your tuition, come back, have something again, tuition. It just whole day just spent with the books.
Absolutely. There's a unidimensional life, absolutely, outside. And here, and which we'll get to later, and, you know, basically you can see, and I'll also add that, you know, this hostel is basically run by the students, of the students, for the students.
Yes.
Almost all aspects of the hostel life.
Entire.
Pretty much everything.
Yes.
Absolutely. Is taken care by the students. And in that, Swami is really making us, again, a lot of this we don't realize while we are here, or many maybe do, I didn't, that he is really making us self-reliant individuals. Don't ask somebody else to do your dirty work. You know, you clean your dishes, you live in the hostel, share it with 15 other students, one room, you know.
Yes.
Best way to learn how to get along with others.
Yes.
Everything in one package, you know. Then you only, every day you take turns, sweep the room,
yes,
clean the room. So, I mean, this room leader was also a student. It's not some other person,
yes,
from outside. So, it's just, you know, the sense of teamwork, the community living, everything just, you know, was just perfect. Now we look at it, the training that was imparted. So, now you're asking about outside life.
Yes.
Right? And there's really very little in terms of, you know, comparison. I mean, there's absolutely, you go from being a multidimensional person here, you know, just jogging so many different things, as they would say, multitasking, you know, doing this, doing that, and yet being super achievers, to really leading very unidimensional life, basically of pure secular education. So your life would typically involve, if you're lucky to be on in a campus that has a hostel attached, you would probably be living in a very different hostel than the Satsai hostel. And I experienced this at IIT Bombay. In bachelor's, I was living a day scholar life where we had to commute 20 kilometers each way. And my first introduction to what's the obnoxious, really inhuman thing called ragging in
you went through that.
Yes, but that's where again Swami protects, you know. Very, very soon they knew something was different about me. And this is nothing special about me again, you know, and I was one of the most ordinary students here. And that they could notice even about some very, you know, ordinary student from here, that there's something different. We better leave this fellow alone, you
so
know.
So somehow you...
Yes, they excluded me.
Oh, they excluded me.
Pretty much. They said, this fellow is not... But it's nice for me to say, you know, that I did something special. You know, despite all that, I know many good students who've been subjected to this inhumane thing called ragging. So, you know, I might have looked different, been different, but without that thing called Swami's grace, I would have been mincemeat for them, you know. So even there, you could see how Swami is protecting you like the lid of his eye, you know. Because, you know, however different you seem to be look and however you protest, you know, it's a very, very, it's a very incredible thing to get out of, you know.
Yes.
So that I was able to go unscathed is itself a testament to that. And I discouraged as much as I could this practice. I only wish I could do more.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine going to the school, being subjected to what you call ragging in India or hazing in the US, day in and day out. I mean, innumerable students have been forced to commit suicide and things like that. And what kind of environment is that to start your day?
In fact, I remember here, when I joined the school in my 11th class, you know, my most enduring memory is how when I stepped into the hostel, one of the seniors, he came and he took my luggage from my hand.
Nowhere else will that happen.
I mean, he took the luggage from my hand and, you know, he told me, brother, from where have you come from? What is your name? And he took me, he didn't allow me to carry my bedding, my suitcase, took me to my cupboard, and he showed me, and then he took me, he showed, this is the dining hall, this is where you can, these are where the restrooms are, this is where you can freshen up, and at this time lunch will be given. And if you have anything else, please, I'm always there for you. I mean,
it's
like home.
It's more than home now that we think, we look back, you know. That's definitely an exception. And, I mean, I hope it doesn't remain an exception that more and more institutions have this kind of attitude. And so in that kind of environment, that's absolutely diametrically opposite to this kind of spiritual environment, you go in, it's a very fear-based environment outside where you're trying to really, you don't know what you're actually doing. You know that at the end of these 4 years, you want to get a job. And that's so different again than the philosophy of our, of Sai institutions, where Swami has said education is not for living, it's for life. So, the absolute purpose of education itself changes when you go outside and you fall into that trap. And I must say, more and more you stay in a particular place, it rubs off on you. You yourself start to become that, you know. So it's because of Swami's grace that you hold on as much, and he holds on to you, to be honest. It's not you holding on to anything.
Correct.
He holds on to you and protects you. And so somehow you come out of this with a semblance of at least your belief system intact. And however, you know, the education is geared absolutely for getting a job. No,
whatever the mission statement of the university elsewhere might state, it could be as lofty as the mission statement here, but how much of it really happens in actual practice is the question.
Actually, I doubt they have a mission statement.
Okay.
So, you know, most of them really, you know, there are fly-by-night colleges. So many of them, as you know, I can't even count where. It's absolutely simple. They will say, we have 100% placement. That's it. That's our motto. That also probably is an absolute lie. But that's probably what they'll say. Where are they placed and what place they're getting a job? All they'll just state that. So from day one, you're subjected to inhumane practices like ragging. You go into a classroom and, you know, there's no sense of real direction. You're being taught something, you know, you have to, at the end of the semester, you have to make a mark on this. So, you know, there's absolutely from Sai institutions where there's a harmonious development of body, mind and spirit. Here it's almost when you go outside, and I won't make generalization. I'm just saying most of the time it's just geared towards just the mind, not even the body. You know, they don't care whether you're physically fit, whatever, it's up to you.
Yes.
They don't care about that. They just, you know, they're here to teach their lessons.
Yes.
You know, this, the, you know, whatever, you know, fluid mechanics, whatever. And even that is very impartial at best, because here, you know, many of the times the teacher in Swami's institute would try to blend in Swami's teachings into the course, right? It's not just, you know, you're being taught physics.
Yes.
Or some, in physics or in biology, what, you know, aspects of Swami's message could they integrate it, like Swami has explained in Vidyavahini, you know?
Yes.
How to blend all this? It was always trying to blend all this together, that this and that are not actually that different.
Yes.
Right, they're really, you know, more of two sides of the same coin, you know, secular education and spiritual education.
Yes.
So even the secular education outside is very much a very lopsided thing at best. At IIT, where I studied later at IIT Bombay, I got my first experience of hostel life outside. Mm. In my years in Hyderabad, I was lucky that I stayed with my grandmother. So there was more or less a very protected environment even there. Whereas at IIT Bombay, I got a first-hand look at the system. And I must say, it's absolutely, you know, students are brilliant, all that is absolutely true. You can see many of the undergraduates are, you know, when I was a teaching assistant there, I could see there were students who were just incredibly brilliant, you know, who could solve any problem you threw at them, you know, any physics problem, any math problem. So we were hard pressed to set a problem that, you know, that they couldn't really solve. But you could see that again, that there was a huge amount of ego that, you know, these students felt that they were extraordinarily special by virtue of their cleverness. And there was an absolutely unrestricted life in the hostel. So, for example, here the day would, in Swami's institution, the day has a very specific schedule and you cannot violate that. There you can attend the class if you want, you can skip the class if you want. Some people go, they're so clever that they can skip classes all year and still really do so well. So there's really, the emphasis is not on on-site learning, you know. Some teachers probably insist on attendance. So they're clever enough that they can do it. Then, you know, in the hostel itself, there was, you know, very much a mixing of all kinds of, you know, this, the opposite sex, and, you know, you could see all kinds of things in your hostel room. You could, you know, they have unrestricted access to the internet, and there's a parallel pirate network of all kinds of videos, and students spend much of their time watching all kinds of things, you know, and it rubs off on us, you know. Eventually you're sharing a room. For example, yes, you're sharing a room with another person, and you know you're doing, you know, that environment rubs off on you too. I mean, it's so hard.
On one hand, you see them; they are actually extremely brilliant when it comes to their academics and
absolutely
and their intelligence. But when it comes to this aspect, what Bhagwan here always emphasized about character, there you really saw that actually there is no effort made by the institution. And you always thought that as a teenager, freedom is, you know, freedom means that you can do anything at any time and the way you like. And here, Bhagwan, I mean, to think about what true freedom is. True freedom is actually if you can, at your will, control.
Absolutely.
That is actually true freedom.
That's absolutely. And, you know, so... there is, you know...
So hostel was a completely, totally different environment.
It is, and that, and the food you're eating, you know, I mean, and it's important to emphasize that, you know, non-vegetarian and vegetarian food is all cooked side by side, and is cooked side by side, and people are eating side by side. And, you know, this is where, again, you know, I will be very honest that, you know, the idea of how important the Brahmarpanam prayer is only sunk in many years later. And I could see a distinct difference in my own thoughts, you know.
What is the insight that you received about Brahmarpanam?
Well, you know, first of all, there's so much of theory behind it, it seems Swami has explained. But the bottom line I understand now is that today, not only the food, but all the five elements Swami is saying are polluted. So the water we drink, everything is polluted. And the only way to purify them, there is no chemical or biological or reverse osmosis, nothing can purify it, because every object has the gross and the subtle aspects. Everything has been polluted. There's no way that any particular technology is going to purify the air and
everything that we take in.
Exactly.
In every form.
Yeah, the eyes, the ears, the mouth. So, but
I mean, even that is food. What the eye sees is also food. Exactly. What the nose takes in, what the ear takes in is also food.
Absolutely. And focusing specifically on the food that
physical
we are eating,
food, yes.
There's, you know, clearly I will tell you, you will eventually that then you neglect to do Brahmarpanam. Because of, you know, either negligence or shy that, you know, you're feeling a little embarrassed to do that in front of everybody else. And let's be honest, many of us who go outside have some such reasons, you know, either we don't understand why.
Or you want to do it kind of when no one is noticing.
Exactly.
Or you know, in a manner that just you know about it and, you know.
Absolutely. And so you will start, and because Swami has said that in this day and age, particularly that's the most important thing, that, you know, the food, the gross part of the food that we eat goes out, you know, is excreted, but the subtle form constitutes our outermost sheath or annamaya kosha. And the innermost, and the second sheath inside that, which is the pranamaya kosha or the life sheath,
yes,
is the subtle form of the water that we drink. In fact, that, and as you know today, the water is extremely polluted. So these two sheets, or the outermost sheets, annamaya and pranamaya, are influencing everything inside. So no matter what sadhana you're undertaking, whatever you're doing, if you're eating and not offering that food, at least saying, I'm offering it to you, Swami, if you forget that, as I did, then your thought processes are bound to get affected. And so I'm stating this honestly because many years later, and actually much more recently, I understood as I started after Swami's Mahasamadhi, a real, real revival in my life where I started looking deeply into Swami's literature, I realized how much Swami emphasized this. So fast forward this many years later, I have absolutely no problem wherever I am, even if I eat a small thing now, I do Brahmarpanam. And I've noticed how much difference in the thought patterns it has made. I mean, absolutely.
You've experienced the difference in thought patterns.
I have no hesitation in stating that it has become the single most important thing in my daily life, because by itself, I feel that I have advanced spiritually a lot. That the thoughts are so much more straight.
Once you offer the food to God in the right spirit.
Because you're recognizing that food itself as a form of God, as a temporary form of God, you know, and in that spirit you're taking it. That's the only way to, you know, to counter the pollution. And as you, as we've discussed, my work is as a climate environmental scientist,
yes,
and I know a lot about this pollution that we're talking about, of, yes, the water, of the air, of all the five elements. So more than ever I'm conscious now of how much it's making a difference. So here you have this compare and contrast of when I was taking Swami's teachings lightly, and I'm very, you know, embarrassed to state that, but you know,
those were the formative years, and even though you didn't really understand what you were getting, you know, but they just went in, and
exactly,
now the churning is happening, and you
exactly
know,
that
and
seed was sown, you know,
yes,
whether we know it or not,
yes,
and I know it'll happen with every Sai student, you know, whether,
yes,
we know it or not,
yes,
it's I'm sure every student will acknowledge that some point or the other.
In fact, there was an instance which I heard from a senior when Bhagwan himself mentioned this. There was an occasion when Bhagwan was giving a discourse, and it was on very higher levels of Vedanta that Swami was talking about. And there was this elderly person who said, Swami, you're talking about such high philosophy, and you know, this little children from the school, and they're actually not getting anything. You know, many of them have actually dozed off. But you're continuing to speak on such high philosophy. And Bhagwan says, it doesn't matter.
Believe me, we all will. Swami has promised us, He will not leave us even if we do. And from my own personal experience, and we can continue this in further conversations,
yes,
that I, you know, maybe in a later conversation when we talk about work, that and the dilemmas in work, that, you know, he is really, really sincere, you know, when he says he will not leave us even,
yes,
if we do. That you know, he is never going to reveal himself, yes, how he is doing it. But we know, looking back.
Yes.
And so, I am absolutely convinced that he will, you know, this contract he made with us is sacred. He will not violate it, even if we do.
Yes.
So, on that note...
Yes, I think, yeah, this time is running out, so we will have to pause. But just to complete that story, you know, Swami said, doesn't matter if they are not understanding anything. All this will just go into them. Doesn't matter, even if they are, you know, sort of dozing. Doesn't matter. All this is going into them, and someday it will come back to them. You know, someday it will sprout, and that's what you see very often with Bhagwan's students, especially all of them who have gone through this institution. Sometime it comes back, and then a sort of a reawakening happens, and all in his plan.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Pawan. I know there is so much more that you can share. In fact, the insight that you are sharing about Brahmarpanam is so, so profound. And you being an expert sort of in climate change, and you have done your specialization in climate science, and you know, you've done your research on the effects of future climate change and global and regional air quality. And you know, given that you have done so much, work on this field, trying to understand the climate, trying to understand how all these things around us, the elements work, and now juxtaposing that with what Bhagwan has said, I think perhaps you get very beautiful insights about how to lead life, about how to tailor and sort of mold our lives, and perhaps bring some changes in our lifestyle in accordance with Bhagwan's teachings.
Absolutely. And after many, many failed attempts, I will say I'm starting to make some sense of all that. And we'll surely delve into that.
Yes, yeah, we definitely. I just hope we'll get to meet again and continue this discussion. Finally, Pawan, did you ever think when you came to Parthi this time that you'll be actually on Radio Sai?
Never, never. You know, absolutely. It's a precious opportunity provided by Swami.
And I'm really thankful to Bhagwan that he made it happen and we got to hear from you. And I really hope that we'll continue this discussion. And especially, I'm really excited to know from you about what you have studied about nature, and then how we can better and with more conviction, you know, take to practicing these things that Bhagwan has said repeatedly over the years, now with new understanding and with new conviction, and in a manner that we can convince even others to follow these principles. I hope we'll get to talk a lot more about these things perhaps sometime in the near future.
Absolutely. And you know, let me add that you guys at Radio Sai are just whether you know it or not, many, many people are really getting their Sai food every day through you. So, well, please keep up the good work.
Yes.
And thank you.
Well, let us... Swami started this in 2001, and he definitely, Sai is the soul and the inspiration and the one who is actually doing all the work in Radio Sai. And is basically, even this Thursday Live, which completed its 1 year just a few weeks ago, it's again his blessing. And we just hope that we continue the service and better it as the days go by. Dear listeners, it's time to wind up this last leg of Thursday Live programs. Time to draw the curtains on outside, inside, deep inside. And I just hope that you found something useful in this conversation. Please do write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Please share what you would like to hear more from us, based on the discussion we had today, or on anything else that you've been reading about Swami, or you want to know about spirituality. Please feel free to write and ask your questions. We'll do our best to see how we can answer and how we can discuss about this in the light of Bhagwan's teachings. And if you missed any part of the program, you can, as always, download these from our website, radiosai.org, from the Thursday Live archives. Tomorrow, all these files will be available for you to download. And in a few moments from now, as I sign off, you will continue to listen to a drama on Purandara Dasa, which was presented in front of Bhagwan on 24th July 2007 by little children. And this is a dance drama. So continue to keep listening, keep loving, and keep living in His message. I'm Team Radio Sai Bishu. Thank you so much for being with me. And finally, from all of us at Radio Sai, a sweet goodbye and loving Sadam from Prashant and Elam.